Ekatra Podcast Conversations, for the curious, essential knowledge simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome to the deep dive.
Today we are really turning our attention to the physical world all around us.
Everything, really.
Yeah, everything. The phone in your hand, the cup you're drinking from, the building right over your head. You know, if you've ever found yourself wondering, why does steel bend but glass just shatters?
Or how engineers manage to make metals stronger without making them heavier.
Exactly. Well, if that's you, you are in for, a really profound shift in perspective.
We're embarking on a deep dive into the invisible architecture of materials, and we're guided by the foundational work of scientist Christopher Hall. For a lot of people, materials are just stuff, you know, a collection of arbitrary substances. Hall challenges that idea completely. He shows us that every single material behavior, from the flexibility of rubber to the immense strength of a turbine blade, is rooted in one fundamental concept, atomic arrangement. So the mission today is to equip you with this powerful new lens. Because once you understand Hall's central thesis, you realize the world isn't arbitrary at all. It's a rational, engineered place.
And this couldn't be more relevant today. We're not just talking about historical leaps, you know, from the Bronze Age to the Silicon Age. We're talking about solving 21st century issues.
Right.
How do we sequester carbon in concrete? How do we build more efficient solar cells? Or create fully recyclable products? All of those questions, they're fundamentally rooted in material science. That's the constraint we have to overcome.
So let's meet the guide who brings this this complex field to life. Christopher Hall. He's Professor Emeritus of Materials Science at the University of Edinburgh.
And he's highly regarded for his ability to just synthesize these extremely dense, complex ideas for a wide audience.
What makes his perspective so distinctive, though?
Well, I think it's his background. He didn't start as, say, a traditional physicist looking at bark matter. His academic foundation is actually in chemistry.
And that's crucial because...
It's absolutely crucial because it gives him this powerful bottom-up view. He begins the story exactly where it belongs, with the atom and the chemical bonds that hold everything together. He sees material science as applied chemistry, just on a grand scale.
And yet his expertise is also tremendously practical. That's a rare combination.
It is. He's done extensive real-world research into porous, large-scale materials like cement and concrete.
So literally the stuff that forms the foundation of our entire world.
Exactly. So you have this dual perspective, the highly theoretical scientist who also has deep industrial experience in things like semiconductors and biomaterials. He's the ideal explainer.
He bridges that gap from the subatomic to the skyscrapers we see every day.
He doesn't just describe materials. He explains the elegant rules that govern them.
So as we dive into his work, what is that core thesis? The idea that underpins this entire field.
Well, Hall argues it all comes down to one fundamental relationship, the structure property relationship.
A unifying theory.
It is. And simply put, how a material behaves, its properties, so whether it conducts heat or snaps or stretches, is determined not just by which atoms it contains, but overwhelmingly by how those atoms are arranged in three-dimensional space.
The book takes you on this incredible logical journey. You start with the infinitesimally small
atoms, bonds,
and you build up layer by layer until you understand mechanical strength, electrical conductivity, why things fail. It shifts material science from being just a collection of facts into this unified discipline.
And that framework is what moves us past our historical reliance on just discovering materials, you know, the Bronze Age, the Iron Age. Today, material science is a creative engine. It lets us actively design materials atom by atom.
Tailoring them to solve future challenges.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's start at that foundational level then.
Yeah.
The atoms and their bonds. Hall calls this the true genetic code of a material.
Right. This is where the baseline properties are set. You can think of the atomic bond as a kind of contract between atoms. So take ionic bonds, you see these in ceramics, or even table salt. Electrons are transferred, creating charged ions. It's a very strong non-directional attraction. The engineering implication of that is immense strength, but because that relationship is so rigid, any slight stress can't be relieved. It just breaks. That's brittleness.
Which is why you can't really bend a ceramic plate.
You can't. The bonds refuse to yield. Now, compare that to the metallic bond. This is the ultimate communal arrangement, a kind of sea of delocalized electrons shared among a lattice of positive metal ions.
And that electron sea is everything.
It's the defining feature of our modern world. It explains the excellent conductivity of heat and electricity. But crucially, because the atoms are submerged in this flexible electron sea, they can slide past one another without the whole structure fracturing.
And that's ductility. Malleability. It's why you can bend metals, stretch them into wires.
Precisely. And then finally, you have covalent bonds, where electrons are shared and directional. Think of diamond or polymers. These are highly specific and often extremely strong,
giving us massive hardness, like in a diamond or the long, stable chains that make up plastic.
But like you said before, the structure, the arrangement, is the other half of the story. You can have the exact same chemical ingredients, but if the arrangement is different, the properties can diverge wildly.
This is the whole order versus disorder idea.
So on one side, you have crystalline materials, highly ordered, repeating lattice patterns, like a perfect 3D brick wall. That's quartz, or most metals.
And on the other,
you have amorphous materials like window glass, where the atoms are arranged randomly. They're essentially frozen in a disordered state, like a liquid caught mid-pour.
The best case study for this has to be glass versus quartz.
It's perfect. Both are silicon dioxide, cellulose, same atoms. But the crystalline order of quartz makes it highly robust. Glass, in its disordered state, is isotropic. It looks the same in every direction, which is why it's transparent. Light just passes right through.
But that internal messiness, that disorganization, means it has no easy way to relieve stress.
None. So when it's struck, you get that characteristic rapid catastrophic fracture.
Okay, so this is where we hit the first truly counterintuitive aha moment for me. We're taught that perfection is the goal, but in material science, the opposite is often true. We have to talk about defects.
Yes, the idea that flaws are not failures, they are features.
It's such a profound realization.
It really is. Real-world materials are never perfect, and honestly, if they were, they'd be largely useless. The most important imperfection in metals is something called a line defect, or a dislocation.
Which is what? Exactly. An extra plane of atoms.
It's basically an extra half plane of atoms that's been squeezed into the crystal lattice, and it creates this area of local stress.
And here's the genius part. It's the movement of these dislocations, the way they allow atomic planes to slip over each other one by one, that gives metals their ductility. When you bend a paperclip, you are literally witnessing billions of dislocations moving through that crystal structure.
And if you want to make the metal stronger, you need to stop those dislocations from moving so easily. That's what metallurgy is all about, the science of intentionally controlling defects.
So when you strengthen pure soft iron into hard steel,
you add carbon atoms. Those carbon atoms are point defects that physically block or pin the dislocations. They stop them from moving. You are leveraging controlled imperfection to dramatically increase performance.
So the strength of a skyscraper relies on engineering these tiny atomic imperfections. That's amazing. And that same principle, controlling defects, is the foundation of the digital revolution.
Absolutely. Let's talk about tailoring properties using point defects in semiconductors.
Okay.
Pure silicon is our starting point, but on its own, it's a poor conductor. It's an insulator. To turn it into a semiconductor, we use a process called doping.
Which sounds bad. We're intentionally introducing impurities.
We are. We introduce specific impurity atoms like phosphorus or boron, which create point defects.
It seems so weird that we spend billions making this incredibly pure silicon, only to then deliberately pollute it.
But it's all about precision. When you dope silicon with phosphorus, you introduce an extra electron. That creates what we call an N-type semiconductor. If you use boron, you create a whole an absence of an electron. That's a P-type.
And by layering those N-type and P-type materials together,
you create the transistor, an exquisite atomic switch. So the chip in your smartphone isn't pure at all. It's an exquisitely polluted crystal, engineered atom by atom to act as billions of switches.
Truly mind-blowing. And this need to tailor properties is true for plastics too, right? Like polyethylene?
Exactly. It's the same basic molecule, but the final structure, how those long polymer chains pack together, is everything. If the chains are tightly and regularly packed, you get high-density polyethylene, HDPE. It's rigid for things like milk jugs.
And if they're loose and tangled?
If the chains are highly branched and packed loosely, you get low-density polyethylene, LDPE. Flexible, used for shopping bags. Same chemistry, different processing, totally different properties.
Which brings us to the ultimate goal here, materials by design. We've moved past just using what nature gives us. We now invent entirely new categories of matter.
And the best example is the composite. This is where you combine two or more materials, often with radically different properties.
One for strength, one for flexibility, maybe.
Right. The goal is to get performance that's impossible in any single material. Think of carbon fiber reinforced polymers used in aircraft or high-end sports cars. Strong and lightweight.
And what's fascinating there is that the interface, the bond between the two materials, is often just as important as the materials themselves.
It dictates the composite's overall strength. And now we're even entering the age of smart materials. They don't just sit there. They respond to their environment.
Like shape memory alloys.
Exactly. You can deform them, but when you heat them, they remember and snap back to their original shape. Or piezoelectric materials that generate a charge when you squeeze them. We're building materials with dynamic, intelligent functions.
So if we step back now and try to synthesize Hall's major takeaways, the first theme is, without a doubt, the primacy of the structure-property relationship.
This is the predictive lens. It tells you that if you need a material to behave in a certain way, you have to change its atomic architecture in a specific way. It rationalizes everything.
The second big theme has to be that insight we just covered. Imperfection is a design principle. We have to move past the idea that flaws equal failure.
Absolutely. The ability to control imperfections, whether they're dislocations in steel or doping atoms in silicon, that is the hallmark of advanced engineering.
And Hall consistently reminds us that materials drive civilization. This isn't some niche academic field. It's the unsung hero of human advancement.
Every significant leap from the pyramids to the internet was enabled by a materials breakthrough.
Finally, and this is so critical today, there's the sustainability imperative. The knowledge Hall lays out is the essential key to a circular economy.
We can't solve climate change or resource depletion without fundamentally redesigning the structure of the materials we use, making them lighter, more durable, and fully recyclable.
Hall has some really memorable ways of putting these things. There's one line that's basically, the properties of a material are a direct expression of its internal architecture.
That's the foundational rule. It's a law of physics for materials. If you see toughness or conductivity, you know there is a rational structural reason for it at the atomic level.
Then there's that compelling idea we talked about. In the world of materials, flaws are not failures, they are features.
Such a critical shift in perspective. It highlights that so much of engineering is about managing imperfections, not just eliminating them.
He also has like a wonderful metaphor saying something like, materials are the vocabulary of civilization. Each new word enables new stories to be told.
I love that. It connects a new alloy or a new polymer directly to social and cultural progress. The ability to use iron enabled new societal structures, just as the silicon chip enabled our digital age.
And we can't forget the lesson on failure. Hall reminds us, understanding failure is not admitting defeat. It's the first step toward engineering success.
This is where we learn the most dramatic lessons. You think of the famous collapse of the Tacoma Narrows Bridge Galloping Gertie in 1940.
Right.
That catastrophic event forced engineers to deeply study failure mechanisms like fatigue, which led directly to the safer, better designed structures we have today. Learning how a material breaks is paramount.
So how do we apply this new lens? The best part of Hall's work is how it suddenly makes the ordinary world completely extraordinary.
Look at the items on your desk. Your coffee cup is a ceramic. It's hard and insulating because of those strong ionic bonds. It shatters because those same bonds prevent any dislocation movement. Zero ductility.
Now look at the charging cable for your phone. The internal copper wires are ductile and highly conductive because of the metallic bond C of free electrons.
And the plastic casing is a polymer long chains of covalent bonds, engineered to be flexible and protective, but also an electrical insulator. You now understand why each component was chosen, atom by atom.
And when you fly, you can recognize that an airplane is almost never made of pure steel anymore. It uses specialized aluminum alloys, titanium, or carbon fiber composites. These materials were designed to be stronger than steel at a fraction of the weight.
That knowledge also makes you a much more informed consumer. You had now understand that the difference between thermoplastics, which melt for recycling, and thermosets, which can't be remelted, is just the difference between free-floating polymer chains and chains locked into rigid crosslinks.
You know, what I found most delightful about diving into Christopher Hall's work is just the sheer elegance of it, the elegance of that structure-property relationship. I always knew materials behaved differently, but I didn't realize there was such a succinct, predictive atomic grammar governing every single behavior. That's what's truly surprising.
For me, the lasting insight is that paradigm shift about imperfection. Hall's work tells us that technology isn't magic and the world isn't arbitrary. It shows that by manipulating those invisible architectures, By intentionally adding flaws, we gain a mastery over matter that allows us to shape the future. It forces you to look at the chair you're sitting on, the screen you're looking at, with an entirely new understanding of their material basis.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Accatra Foundation.